Welcome to the first edition of a new transformative show here in the Granite State in regards to politics. It is On Background with Paul Steinhauser and myself, Chris Ryan. I appreciate you joining us for the program and appreciate New Hampshire Healthcare Association for sponsoring the show as well. Caring for the folks that care for you. New Hampshire Healthcare Association, visit nhhca.org for more information. It has been a very, very busy week in politics here in the Granite State and across the country. In just a few moments here on the show, we're going to be joined by Ohio Governor John Kasich to discuss his thoughts on where the Republican Party is headed and whether or not he is considering a run for president again in 2020. But first, the biggest news this week, and that is the fact that Minnesota Senator Al Franken resigned as a United States Senator.
Today, I am announcing that in the coming weeks, I will be resigning as a member of the United States Senate.
Franken's resignation speech was an interesting one in the fact that he did not just resign, but he put some shots across the bow of Roy Moore as well as Donald Trump. Here's what he said in regards to Moore.
And a man who has repeatedly preyed on young girls, campaigns for the Senate with the full support of his party.
Franken also made reference to President Trump during his resignation speech.
I am leaving while a man who has bragged on tape about his history of sexual assault sits in the Oval Office.
And Chris, here's how it played out on Wednesday. Kirsten Gillibrand, the Democratic senator from New York, was the first to come out early in the morning, late in the morning, and call for Franken to resign. About a moment later, our own junior senator here, Democratic Senator Maggie Hassan, also jumped in. And by the end of the day, you had over 30 senators, 13 of them women, the rest men, all on the Democratic side, as well as Susan Collins of Maine, saying it was time for Franken to go. You know, as this drama was unfolding in Washington, I had a chance to speak with Governor Chris Sununu about Al Franken, about Maggie Hassan's role in asking for him to step down, and also about President Trump and both the Republican National Committee still backing Roy Moore in Alabama. Take a listen.
Governor, I'm sure, I don't know if you've seen the news on Senator Hassan calling for Senator Franken to resign. A number of Democrats are now doing that. You spoke out recently at one of these avails with reporters about Roy Moore in Alabama, and I'm wondering about your thoughts now that President Trump and the RNC are supporting him.
Well, I called that Roy Moore should get out of the race immediately. Mm-hmm. It's a little disappointing that it took weeks for Governor Hassan to come to the same conclusion about Al Franken when the allegations are so severe and so clear. I just have an absolute zero tolerance policy for any of this type of behavior when it comes to public officials. Public officials should be held to a much higher standard, but I think the standard we're talking about here is average common decency in terms of providing an atmosphere, a workplace atmosphere that's comfortable for folks, where people can come forward if there are harassment issues, that there's going to be transparency in that. I just have very little tolerance for anyone who doesn't take that incredibly seriously, and when there are issues that come out, doesn't react with the same severity.
Are you disappointed then by what the president and the RNC have done when it comes to Roy Moore?
I said Roy Moore should get out of the race. I stand by that.
What was interesting, Paul, about that and also his remarks in his press conference is that he was absolute in saying that he had zero tolerance for this type of behavior. Now, of course, Governor Sununu remains and has always been a supporter of President Trump during the campaign and now as well. And Democrats were quick to respond, in fact, using a article that you wrote during the last campaign in which you asked Chris Sununu about the Access Hollywood tape in which Donald Trump seemingly describes committing sexual assault. He pushed back on the language that was used, but remained supportive of the president.
Yeah, and we all remember it was a very different setting with Kelly Ayotte, our incumbent Republican senator at the time, who broke with the president. She broke with the president and ended up voting for Mike Pence. That's what she wrote in on the ballot. Chris Sununu did not. And you're right, Democrats pushed back heavily. Of course, the president himself, besides the Access Hollywood tape, we remember the allegations of past sexual misconduct that came out against him from multiple women during the campaign. But Sununu, again, still supports the president, and Democrats are calling him on this. And he wouldn't, as you heard from the clip there, he never really said how he felt about the president and the RNC continuing to back Roy Moore. He kind of kind of let that one slip.
And I think there was a reasoning and rationale for that. We're going to talk a little bit here about the governor's race, which, of course, was going to be heating up here, particularly after the first of the year and a story that you broke this week regarding State Senator Dan Feltes of Concord. But prior to that, there's been a lot of discussion about what Franken's resignation, you know, means. And really, you know, the Senate as a body at this point in time, where you have the tax reform bill, where it was, you know, anything but deliberative in regards to how that process was pushed forth, despite the fact the Senate is referred to as the most deliberative body in the world. And then you have the Franken situation, in which there is processes in place for these types of allegations. Jean Shaheen has said that she will not comment in regards to whether or not she was calling for Franken's resignation because she sits on the Senate Ethics Committee.
And they have a preliminary investigation underway. And
right.
That's why she's, yeah.
So do you think, and it'll be interesting to see, I mean, is there a harm in the fact that we are a reactionary society and here you have this deliberative body reacting in regards to Franken? And I'm not saying whether he should resign or whether he shouldn't resign, his behavior good or bad, but there's a process in place in the Senate. And in my view, there is the potential for, you know, further situations like this when you don't let the process play out. And the Senate is supposed to be all about process.
Yeah, but right now in the climate we're in with this this climate of sexual harassment and of powerful men abusing women who work under them. I just, you know, regardless of how Al Franken felt, and he felt that many of these cases were overblown in his case, it just wasn't going to happen. Politically, here's why I think what happened with Franken is important. I think it now gives the Democrats the upper hand when it comes to sexual harassment. They've cleaned shop, let's say. Al Franken is gone or will be gone in a week or two. John Conyers, who the longest-serving member of the U.S. House, is now gone. The two high-profile cases of Democrats in Congress facing multiple allegations of sexual misconduct are now gone. If Roy Moore wins that election next week, the Republicans have a huge, huge problem when it comes to the issue of sexual harassment. This now gives the Democrats the upper hand as they've cleaned shop.
Yeah, it was interesting to hear Newt Gingrich, Laura Ingraham come to the defense of Al Franken in some shapes, saying that this was a dangerous path in regards to process. What they're saying and what they're trying to do is get out ahead of what's going to happen with Roy Moore. The Democrats have been able to claim the high moral ground, if you will, at this point in time, and it's going to be interesting to see how things progress in regards to that Senate race in Alabama. It will also be interesting to see how things progress in regards to the governor's race here in New Hampshire. Governor Chris Sununu is in good shape. He's been able to identify and find the middle ground. He has his own separate brand outside of Donald Trump, but there have been and will be significant efforts to brand the two as one.
Oh, no doubt about it.
And as we look forward towards individuals running against Chris Sununu here in New Hampshire, we have one individual who has been running essentially for a year in Steve Marchand, and we may have another.
Yep, and that another, as we just mentioned, is Dan Feltes. I first broke the news earlier this week, as you mentioned. Dan Feltes, according to sources very close to the two-term state senator from right here in Concord, is seriously mulling a bid. Him and his wife, Erin, are seriously considering this after the last couple of weeks when sources tell me a lot of high-profile Democrats have reached out to Feltes and said, hey, you know, you should seriously consider about a run for governor, irrespective of who else may run. And that's a hint towards, of course, Colin Van Ostern, who's a good friend of Feltes, the former executive counselor who was the Democratic nominee last year, who narrowly lost. It was about 17,000 or 18,000 votes to Sununu, is also thinking of running again. We'll have decisions probably from both these gentlemen in January, maybe early February at the latest. You know, these decisions probably have to be made in the next month or so. I don't think both will run. I highly doubt that. I think one of the two will run, and you've already got Steve Marchand, as you said, in the race, ever going all the way back to March. But yeah, Chris, you're absolutely right. It's going to be tough to beat Sununu. Right now, he's got an approval rating that's averaging about 60%, even about 50% among Democrats, right, which is extremely impressive. He did very well. He had got most of his agenda passed in this year's legislative session, but two things could definitely trip him up. A, the next legislative session, there's some serious issues that will have to be dealt with, including Medicaid expansion, where, you know, depending on how he comes out on those issues, it could be a problem come November. And, of course, yes, Donald Trump and the national climate could be a problem for Chris Sununu going forward. But right now, he's looking pretty good.
Republicans are hoping that Hillary Clinton thinks about running again for president in 2020, and we're crowing about that fact when she visited the Granite State, and when she did so on Tuesday. You were at that event. What were your takeaways?
Yeah, about 1,000 people there at Gibson's Bookstore lined up in the inclement weather to get their book signed. Clinton seemed to be in pretty good spirits as she does her book tour for What Happened. We in the media had a chance to get a few questions to her. So just before we were ushered out, myself and Adam Sexton from WMUR were able to question the Madam Secretary, and here's how it went.
Just quickly, on the passing of Mary Louise Hancock, if there's anything you'd like to say.
What an amazing person. A life that was lived with energy, intensity, and real concern for our country and everyone in her community. I was privileged to know her as a friend, and I'm so grateful to her. I would go to visit her, and she would just sit me down and tell me what I was supposed to think and do and say, and you just always knew that you were in the presence of somebody who was very special. And it's a sad day for not only those of us who knew her, but maybe people who never knew her. She was active in politics. She was always trying to make a difference, to make life better for people. And I'm just really grateful for her life and her service.
Thanks very much, folks. Let's take out.
It's great. It's great being back. I love coming to New Hampshire, and I love the friends that I've made over 25 years now, and so any chance I have to come back, I am anxious to take it.
And the president thinks this is ground zero for voter fraud conspiracy in 2016. What do you think about that?
Well, you can read my book, and you can find out what I think about it.
All right, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, that is Paul Steinhauser and Adam Sexton right there talking with Hillary Clinton briefly at Gibson's Bookstore.
And pick up on that comment. She's always anxious to return to the Granite State, she just said. And that's what you saw. Once myself and Sexton got that out on Twitter, you saw a lot of Republicans in this state kind of overjoying, yeah, maybe she is going to run again in 2020. Republicans would love nothing better than have Hillary Clinton run again. I don't think she's 100% ruled it out. I think it's extremely unlikely. But, yeah, you could tell from her voice there. Maybe she hasn't ruled it out 100%.
Is John Kasich going to run in 2020? We'll ask him up next here on Background on WKXL, presented by the New Hampshire Healthcare Association. Welcome back. You're listening to On Background here on WKXL 1039, 1450 and ConcordNewsRadio.com. New show with my friend Paul Steinhauser and I, presented by the New Hampshire Healthcare Association. Honored to be joined on the program right now by our good friend, individual who we got to know very well on the campaign trail back in 2015 and 16. He is the governor of Ohio, John Kasich. Governor Kasich, how are you?
Great. Good to be with you guys. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you as well, and appreciate you joining us for the program. I'm interested in hearing from you in regards to what you think Republicans have either been able to do or failed to do in regards to policy the last year. There's obviously the opportunity for transformative policy on taxes, on health care, and it seems like there has been an unwillingness to really roll up their sleeves and create policy that benefits all.
Well, I think it, you know, campaign promises sometimes are hard to fulfill. And you know, when the argument was we need to repeal Obamacare, well, we needed to know what you were going to replace it with, and if what you were going to do was going to leave, you know, 20 million Americans without health insurance, that's not a policy that's going to go over very well, and you're going to have trouble rallying the forces behind that. And when you think about a state like New Hampshire, which has had this enormous challenge as it's related to the problems of opiates and all that, you know, things like Medicaid expansion have provided additional resources, you know, at the real level. I mean, part of the problem, guys, is that when you're in Washington, things are pretty theoretical. Mm-hmm. But when you're at home and you're, you know, the mayor or you're the governor, all of a sudden, these things are very real. These are real problems that lay in front of you. And I think what happened on the health care was that a lot of people who live at home, people who actually live their daily lives, said, no, this isn't going to be good for me. And so that's why that policy failed. Now, does Obamacare need to be reformed? There's no question it does, and there can be significant reforms, but it has to be done in a way in which people aren't going to have massive loss of health insurance. The tax bill that is passing, that's an issue that tends to unite Republicans, because we all believe in smaller government and we believe in lower taxes. Now, we did a tax bill in Ohio, a number of them, but what we did was try to make sure that as we reduced the rate at the top, we also made sure that people who were the working poor would also get some advantages. And I hope as they reshape this bill, and we didn't cut taxes more than what we could afford. And so here in the state, we're up almost a half a million jobs. We're running a $2 billion surplus. I think that was the way to do it. But they're going to move forward on a tax bill. I think on the positive side, you've had conservative appointments to the court, which has been good. And I also believe that the attitude of deregulation, the attitude that we're going to regulate with common sense, has been something that was really needed and something that's very appealing and something they should be praised for. Outside of that, I think the foreign policy is kind of a mess right now. And we tend to be going it alone. We've become anti-trade. I mean, these are not the things that I think fly high for the Republican Party. It doesn't really represent the party that I have strongly believed in my lifetime.
Governor Kasich, I remember soon after President Trump took over in the White House, you had a meeting with him in the Oval Office. Have you had many interactions with him since then? Has he sought out your advice?
Well, I went in to see him and talked to him a lot about health care, and then I had, I think, one other call with him a little bit later. But since then, that's been about it.
Curious as well, as Al Franken announced his resignation today, and in doing so, he was very critical of the fact that President Trump, given the allegations against him, remains in the Oval Office, that Roy Moore remains in the United States Senate race. Bernie Sanders has called for President Trump to think about resignation. Given the current climate, do you think that the president should give consideration to resignation as well?
I mean, we got Al Franken doing what I think is best for himself and his family. That's probably why he made that decision. The issues surrounding President Trump were issues that were talked about during the campaign. I spend my time when I either agree or disagree with Donald Trump, I spend my time on policy, and that's where I'm going to stay.
You've been outspoken, though, in your, you know, against Roy Moore in the last month. Are you upset?
Well, I've said that I thought as a nominee, he should be disqualified. And as you know, not just on the basis of things that we saw with the president in this area, but in a variety of areas where I thought we diverged from two paths. One where I see you recognize problems and you try to solve them versus, you know, you look at problems and you could drive people negative. And it's caused consternation among Republicans. I never did endorse the president, so I really don't have any more to say about it than that.
In regards to the potential of Republicans going and becoming the party of Trump, so to speak, and leaving individuals who are moderate or have a mindset that is similar to yours in regards to problem solving and working with the other side, do you view the election of Donald Trump and the direction the Republican Party is going in as squeezing out individuals who want to work with Democrats? And do you see that as the direction the party is continuing to go in, or do you think it will reverse?
I mean, there's times when you want bipartisanship, and there's sometimes when it can't be achieved. When it comes to economic programs, sometimes it's not always very easy to do. I'm a conservative, but I'm a conservative who believes in trade. I think that trade is good for our country, both economically and also geopolitically. I do believe that immigrants are a critical part of our country. I believe they bring a spark and they bring a series of talents that we would miss if we didn't have them. I do believe that we should not act just unilaterally in the world, although sometimes we might have to. I think we need to avoid that as much as possible. I am very concerned about the growing debt that we have in the country. I mean, I guess what I'm saying to you guys is that I'm the governor of Ohio, the seventh largest state. I have a right to define what it means to be Republican as much as anybody else does. The president is normally the titular head of the party. But that doesn't mean we have to walk in lockstep. So, as far as I'm concerned, I mean, look, I don't get any instructions from some office somewhere that tells me how to think like a Republican. I'm a conservative that believes that government should be a last resort, not a first resort. I'm a Republican that believes we should be concerned about the environment, but not worship it. I've talked about free trade. I've talked about immigration. And here in the state, what my philosophy has been that, you know, it's not good enough if just the usual suspects benefit from economic growth. It needs to be across the board. We have to deal with the issue of race, deal with the issue of gun violence. I mean, all these things. So I guess I would describe myself as a conservative problem solver. And so I've got a right to talk about what I think it means to be a Republican as much as anybody else does. And so they can talk, I can respect their view, but I'm going to have my own.
Governor, last time we had a chance to see you in person here in New Hampshire was back in the early spring. You were on your book tour for Two Paths, America Divided or United. I'm wondering, we have an election year coming up next year. Are we going to see you back here, maybe helping campaign with your friend Governor Sununu?
If I'm asked to come in and help, depending on what my schedule is, because, you know, I am the governor and I've got a lot of stuff to do out here. But, you know, I'm always willing to lend a hand. You just don't know. I've got a lot of requests now, which is nice. I don't mean that arrogantly, but it's nice. And we try to sort through the place where I can, you know, do my job here and yet still have a significant impact. So, you know, I'd love to come back to New Hampshire. I love the place. How could I not? You know, New Hampshire treated me so great. I have so many friends and people that I'm really affectionate about that live in New Hampshire. And, you know, I hope I'll come back. I can't tell you now. I know that Bruce Berkey, who was very instrumental in my campaign, and John Sununu, Senator Sununu, who was my chairman, I know they want me back there because I whooped them both in golf, and I know that they would like to have a rematch, but I don't know how that's what's going to happen there.
It's going to be tough playing golf here for the next couple months unless you...
And my great friend, and I would love to be able to see my great friend Gordon Humphrey. He was just a terrific guy, and he's an amazing guy, amazing American, a patriot. He's fantastic. So lots of friends that I have back there, and you know, I got to get back up there, I guess, just so I can say hi to everybody so they don't forget about me.
Tom Petty, the late, great Tom Petty, was asked, you know, what his favorite concert moment was. And he said, I wish I could remember one of them. And that, to me, seemed a lot like the New Hampshire primary, where I'll talk to, you know, McCain or Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama. And it all kind of, you know, floods together when individuals try to pick out what the most significant moment or moments were for them in the New Hampshire primary. And I'm curious, you know, you wrote about it a lot in the book, so clearly you do have, you know, certain memories that stand out. I'm curious as to, you know, what stands out to you the most in regards to the Hampshire primary.
One of the things that's interesting, you know, I went up to New Hampshire and I had less than 2% name ID, and we did well over 100 town hall meetings, which I loved, and met, again, a lot of really great people. There were incidents that happened that just stick in my mind, of meeting with people, trying to talk to them about who I was, and then to have beaten everyone in that field except for Donald Trump, heading to South Carolina, I really would have hoped, as has been the case historically, that I would have received a really enormous bump from outperforming and beating all these folks. It just never happened. The media was so fixated on Donald Trump that never happened, which never gave me the name ID early on. But look, I just love the place. I like to drive around. I like the people. I like the town. I guess I could talk about a number of things, but what really probably meant more to me than anything was the fact that we could do so many town hall meetings, and it was great. It was really electrifying, and I'm really so indebted to, you know, when I say I don't want the people there to forget about me, I don't mean forget about me politically. There were a lot of people that stuck their neck out for me. I was really unknown. These are relationships that are personal, more than they even are politically.
You do have that name recognition now, though, and we see you. You're a staple on the Sunday.
Well, yeah, it's sort of funny, Paul.
Yeah.
It's funny. You know, since the election, you know, I think more people know me now than they did even when I was getting out. And, you know, everybody wants to know, well, what are you going to do? I really don't have an idea what.
How'd you know Paul was going to ask that question?
Yeah, that was the first thing from my mind.
Well, look, what I'm saying is that everybody wants to know, okay, what are you going to do? And I think nobody believes me when I tell them I do not know what I'm going to do. you know, I'm not really spending. I'm not anxious about the fact that I'm going to be out. You know, I went through this once before, guys. When I was a congressman, you know, I announced I was leaving. Nobody could figure out why. I said, well, it was time to move on. And I didn't know what I was going to do, and things worked out. I like to think about that old proverb that says that the Lord will fulfill the purpose of for my life. That's what I got to do. I have to have faith that things will come. Now, that doesn't mean you lay in bed. I mean, I still want to have a voice. I still have a political organization. I want to be able to participate in the national discussion and debate. But I just don't know how that's all going to work. But we'll see. I just don't know any more than that. I'm not keeping any secrets from you either. I don't know what I'm going to do.
We'll keep asking. I promise you that. And, you know, a year from now, you'll be finishing up as Ohio governor and, I guess, as you said, looking for new challenges and adventures.
Exactly right. And, you know, I have another year, and you get remembered an awful lot. Maybe not totally, but an awful lot for what you – how you go out, and I want to go out as strong as I can. You never know what minefields are out there. But I tell you what I'm happy about, guys. We're up, we're up almost 500,000 jobs. Our fiscal situation is really strong. But the other thing I'm really pleased about is those who were the least among us, at least we've tried to develop enough resources to make sure that Ohio is not just for one group of people and not everyone. And I was just in a place the other day where I saw some of the disabled out there that were working, people who before nobody had paid any attention to. They're starting to be mainstreamed. I love to see that. And those are the kind of things that I feel, you know, has been a really important part of what we've done out here.
Well, Ohio's done a great thing for the Boston sports scene, and we want to thank you so much for Kyrie Irving. That's been a real blessing.
Oh, my goodness.
A real blessing for the Boston Celtics.
Unbelievable. You know, the thing is about that, guys, when they announced that trade, now I don't know as much about Isaiah Thomas as perhaps I should, and he's been injured, and hopefully he'll come back and be a great spark. But it has been amazing how tremendous the performance of Kyrie Irving has been. It's been pretty darn remarkable. So, I've always kind of liked the Celtics, so I'm glad to see it. But, let's not get ahead of ourselves on the Celtics over the Cavs. Please don't get it. I don't want you guys to be so disappointed.
Well, we might have to make a little wager on that down the line. But Isaiah Thomas is a great person. He's a great story. He's a fighter and a tremendous basketball player. And certainly the Boston fans, Celtics fans, and people like me who are around him with the Celtics love the guy. And hopefully he does well with the Cavaliers. It was tough to see him go. You've got to go.
Let me tell you one other thing that I've been noticing here about, because you guys know about sports in the NBA. The thing that I found interesting is there seems to be an awful lot of aggressiveness in that game right now. I saw the other day the kind of bumping and knocking that Kevin Durant is putting up with. You can't have the NBA with these giant, most athletic guys in the world pounding one another. This would not lead to a good direction for basketball. But look, you know, what's most important as we get ready to leave is that everybody needs to understand, every individual listening, this is not political diatribe or something, stuff I've said for many, many years. Everybody is a leader unto themselves. Everyone watches what you do, somebody in your family or your friends. America is strong when we go from bottom up, not from top down. And so, Merry Christmas to you guys. You're terrific. I've always enjoyed the interface, and hopefully I'll see you again soon. And Paul, it wasn't that long ago that we had the whole family sitting on that couch, that white couch you had doing that interview. We remember that. And of course, Chris, with you, so many interviews, being on the bus. It was great to be with you, and I hope to see you again soon.
Well, we hope to see you again soon as well. It was a great experience spending time with you, and we always look forward to talking to you, and your uplifting messaging is certainly needed in this time, and we appreciate you joining us for the program.
And good luck with the show. Really good luck. Best of luck. Thanks.
Thank
see you again
Governor.
Soon. We'll do it again.
All right.
Thank
sounds
you.
Good. John Kasich right. here on Background with Paul Steinhauser. And I am Chris Ryan, presented by the New Hampshire Healthcare Association. We'll come back and take a look at toll hikes in New Hampshire. Two diverging perspectives on it. Paul talks with Andrew Valinsky, and I talk with Jeb Bradley. In return, here on Background at WKXL, presented by the New Hampshire Healthcare Association.
Welcome back to On Background, brought to you by our good friends at the New Hampshire Healthcare Association. I'm here with Chris Ryan. This is Paul Stein. As you just heard, our one-on-one, I guess you could say, interview with Governor John Kasich of Ohio. I wish he was here in person, but it was great, Chris, to get him on the phone. And, you know, listen, when it comes to John Kasich, I am still a true believer that this man wants to be president of the United States, will run again, especially if the midterms go poorly for the Republicans. Donald Trump will definitely be blamed for that. And I think that a lot of people will be looking for a return maybe to sanity in Washington. And who better to return to sanity than somebody like John Kasich? And Chris, we both know there are a lot of people here in this state on the Republican side, and even those in the middle, the undeclared voters, that voted for and backed Kasich back in the 16 primary. And I think he would be well received here again if he decides to do it one more time, which would be his third run for the White House.
I think that there's definitely a space for John Kasich. The question, and we kind of got to it there in the interview, is that space going to be in the Republican Party? Or is that space running as an independent? And I think that that's a key question. There's going to be a desire for a common sense, kind of boring, dad jokes type of candidate in 2020. Somebody who's, as you mentioned, going to be just very competent and is going to restore the country to some level of sanity and stability and competence. The question, though, is has the party that John Kasich is describing left John Kasich? And is John Kasich better served as an independent candidate? There's been some discussion as to whether or not he was going to run with a Democrat. John Hickenlooper, the governor of Colorado, he swatted that aside and said there'd be a terrible bumper sticker, Kasich Hickenlooper 2020. But I think that that's the question. Yes, I think you're right. John Kasich wants to be president of the United States. He wants to be president. He has a reason and rationale for running for president. But the question is the practicality and how and where he executes that want and desire.
Yeah, John Kasich's got to run as a Republican. You cannot run it. Even though the major parties are definitely weaker than they used to be, you still, in this day and age, whether you're running for Senate or you're running for president, you got to go with a major party. Listen, If the Republicans, if there is a wave next November, Donald Trump will get blamed for the losses and he'll be a much weakened person. He'll still have his base. His base is not going to leave him, but that base is shrinking and will probably shrink even further. And there may be room for a more mainstream Republicans and a conservative like John Kasich. Remember, on a lot of issues, he's probably even more conservative than Donald Trump. There may be. Maybe room for that kind of avenue. Now, again, we're going to have to wait until after the midterm elections to see the results there. If the Republicans actually do well or at least hold their ground in the midterms, it's going to be really, really hard to primary challenge Donald Trump.
And it's going to be hard regardless. If we've looked at the data here in New Hampshire, and it indicates that the water is decent to test a run and for one maximum individual to potentially run against Donald Trump. But still, it's very difficult to coalesce all of the anti-Trump sentiment in the Republican Party around, one individual. And can John Kasich be that individual? Can he play well here in New Hampshire? I don't think there's any question. But as you move to other states, can John Kasich win in Iowa? Maybe. South Carolina? Probably not. In other states. So I still think that it is going to be a challenge for him. Is he better positioned this time? Yes, but the election that he's running in is not going to be as favorable as as 2016.
Specifically New Hampshire, what should be interesting, and I asked him in the interview, he wouldn't give a definitive answer. Will he be back next year to campaign for Chris Sununu? Remember, he came in the summer of 16 when Sununu was running in a pretty tough primary battle, and he backed Sununu. But Sununu now is a big supporter of President Trump in many ways, so will John Kasich be welcome here next year to help campaign for Chris Sununu? Fascinating questions, and I guess stay tuned.
That's Paul Steinhauser. I'm Chris Ryan. This is On Background on KXL. It's presented by the New Hampshire Healthcare Association. When we return, toll hikes in the Granite State. Are they going to happen? We'll talk to two individuals with differing opinions in regards to the toll hikes. Paul goes one-on-one with Councillor Andrew Walensky, and I talk with Senate Majority Leader Jeff Bradley.
Welcome back to the inaugural edition of On Background, brought to you by your good friends at the New Hampshire Healthcare Association. I'm Paul Steinhauser, joined by Chris Ryan. One of the big stories this week, Chris, in politics, of course, to propose toll hikes here in New Hampshire. This is a plan put together by the Department of Transportation at the request of Russell Prescott, the Republican executive counselor who succeeded Chris Sununu on that five-member council, which is part of the executive branch, kind of does a little oversight on the governor. It's up to the executive council to either keep the tolls where they are on the highways or raise them. And right now, there was supposed to be a vote this week on Wednesday by the council to raise the tolls by 50 cents at the tolls in Hooksett on I-93, the tolls on the Everett Turnpike in Bedford, and also the Hampton toll on I-95 and the Dover and Rochester tolls on the Spaulding Turnpike. There was a meeting in Portsmouth Monday night where people got to weigh in on this, and there was a lot of opposition. There was some support as well. Here's what happens going forward. Next week, there's going to be meetings in Manchester and Concord where other regular Granite Staters can weigh in on this. This plan is supported by the two Democrats on the Executive Council, Andrew Valinsky and Chris Pappas, and by Prescott as well. It's opposed by the two Republicans on the Council, David Wheeler and Joe Kenney. I had a chance to talk to Valinsky about it, and take a listen. What happens next in this process? The vote has been delayed for now.
Right. So there are two separate processes. One is the council's approval of a draft 10-year plan. That's the outline of the projects that the state will undertake to fix bridges, widen roads, address safety concerns, build sound walls where they haven't done so in the past. That's the 10-year plan. We produce a draft, and then the governor reviews it and passes it on to the legislature. Separate and apart from that is the toll vote, which the council will take up after it passes the 10-year plan. But the 10-year plan that we are planning to deliver to the governor includes the revenues that will come from increased tolls.
And we're talking about $36 million, that's the projection?
$36 million a year, yes.
And you've now, the 10-year plan has been approved by the council members?
Yes. That happened yesterday at the what's called the GASET meeting, the Governor's Advisory Council on Intermodal Transportation, 3-2.
You were in Portsmouth earlier this week where there was a public meeting where people and businesses were able to weigh in on the toll hike proposal. There'll be more meetings in the next week?
Yes, I have scheduled a meeting in Concord at the DOT offices at 6 p.m. on Tuesday, and Councillor Pappas has a meeting at City Hall in Manchester on Wednesday at 7 p.m. The public is invited and encouraged to attend.
And your projection, or you would assume that there will be a vote by the full council in early next year on the toll proposal?
On the toll proposal, but the council will vote on the 10-year plan officially and pass it to the governor probably December 20.
When it comes specifically to the tolls, the $36 million that would projected revenue, what would that be used for? What kind of projects are we talking about?
So we have safety and economic development concerns, as well as the additional benefit of job creation. So safety, we have some exits in Manchester, exit 6 and 7, which have long outlived their design. Economic development, I don't know if you travel through Concord on Friday afternoons.
It's a mess.
Or coming back from the North Country on Sundays.
It's a mess.
You cannot count on ski business and North Country tourism and the Lakes Region tourism to continue if we continue to throw up roadblocks to passage to those tourist locations. And so there's a project on the books to widen the highway, remove the bottleneck that occurs in Concord on those times. Currently, with present funding, that project won't be completed till 2033.
This extra revenue would speed up that timetable?
It speeds it up so that it's completed 6 years earlier in 2027 and starts as soon as they could put shovels in the ground.
You know, there's been a lot of opposition just in the last couple of days from a lot of Republican lawmakers, especially in the state Senate. We've seen Senate President Morse, Majority Leader Bradley, kind of outspoken in opposition to this. They say the money, this extra money, is not needed, that these projects can get done anyway. Do they have an argument?
So I chaired the Portsmouth hearing in Russell Prescott's absence on Monday, and we almost had a Republican caucus quorum there. There were so many Republican senators in attendance. I'm new to all this, but before taking office, I knew the status of our bridges and roadways and the problems that are there. I can't believe they would intentionally not fix those things if they had the money, which leads me to the belief that their statements may not be quite accurate.
What about the governor? He has basically said he's opposed to these toll hikes, but he respects the council as a former member of the council. Is he trying to have it both ways here?
There is a bit of that. Yesterday we had a council meeting, and the governor said that he would pass our 10-year plan, the council's 10-year plan.
Which includes the toll hikes.
Which includes the toll hike as drafted to the legislature.
Councilor Walensky, thank you very much for your time. We appreciate it.
All right, that's Paul Steinhauser with Andrew Walensky. So, of course, this is an executive council issue, but a lot of representatives and senators weighing in on it because they didn't really know anything about this proposed increase until it came in front of the executive council just prior to Thanksgiving. I talked with Senate Majority Leader Jeb Bradley, who feels that there has not been the due diligence pushed forth in this to create an understanding of if the tolls need to be increased and where the work would be done with the $36 million that are predicted, that is predicted to be raised by the toll increase. Here is Jeb Bradley. In the 10-year plan, is there appropriate funds given to take care of, you know, the red-listed bridge in wherever before it becomes a situation where the bridge is a danger to that community?
Well, I think that is a question that's going to have to be answered as the legislature takes up, you know, the 10-year plan that always gets updated every 2 years. So that'll happen. You know, that will happen this year. I mean, clearly.
So that happens in 2018?
Yeah, okay. And then it happens every second year.
Okay.
So, look, there's no question we need to, you know, continue to maintain our infrastructure, okay? I don't think anybody would argue about that. But we need to be careful when we're spending taxpayer dollars to make sure that, you know, it's appropriate that, you know, and one issue that, you know, keeps coming up is we've put a lot of new resources with the increase in the gas tax and what Senator Morris did in the budget. I think it was the 2015 budget with TIFIA funds, federal funds, that freed up a lot of new money for projects. You know, is there even the ability with the workforce issues that we have now to be able to do these projects? So I think there are a lot of unanswered questions, and, you know, I think if the case can be proven that this is something that really does need to be done and done in the fashion that is being proposed, the public will support it, but I don't think that case has been made yet, and until it's been made, you know, a lot of folks like myself that would be pretty reluctant to, you know, say, yeah, this is a good idea.
Well, definitely a difference of agreement there between Senator Bradley and Councilor Walensky. Republicans in this state are always against tax increases, be they on the highways or anywhere else. But they also are big proponents of improving infrastructure and bringing new businesses to the state. And those businesses often say that infrastructure, highways are a key. So, you know, this is going to be a tough one. Plus, the governor himself, I'm sure, you know, he's in a pickle on this one as well. He opposes the toll increase, but then again, having the improvements on the highway is a good thing to run on when you're running for re-election. So, for the Republicans, this is a tough issue, Chris.
Indeed it is. That was our inaugural edition of On Background here on WKXL, weekly show that takes you behind the curtain in New Hampshire politics with the newsmakers to discuss the issues here in the Granite State in regards to the First Nation presidential primary and here at the issues that affect us in the Granite State. Next week on the program, we're expecting U.S. Senator Jeanne Shaheen to talk tax policy as well as spending in D.C. For Paul Steinhauser, I am Chris Ryan. Thanks so much to our sponsor, the New Hampshire Healthcare Association at nhhca.org. For sponsoring the program, New Hampshire Healthcare Association, caring for those who care for you.